And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it's January 22nd. 22nd day of the year. Only 343 days remain until this year is over with. Hopefully it'll be better than last year.
Motion detected at the front door.
Yep, they always show up when I start talking. Well, in AD 613, 8-month-old Constantine is crowned as co-emperor by his father, Heraclius at Constantinople. It's great to have a job from the moment of conception. In 871, the Battle of Basing. The West Saxons, led by King Althered I, are defeated by the Danelaw Vikings at Basing. 1506, the first contingent of 150 Swiss guards arrives at the Vatican, and they have furnished security, such as it is, since that time. 1517, Ottoman Empire under Selim I defeats the Mamluk Sultanate and captures present-day Egypt at the Battle of Rudaniya. In 1555, the Ewa Kingdom falls to the Tangu Dynasty in what's now Myanmar. Excuse me. In 1689, the Convention Parliament convenes to determine whether James II and the Seventh, the last Roman Catholic monarch of England, Ireland and Scotland, had vacated the thrones of England and Ireland when he fled to France in 1688. 1808, the Portuguese royal family arrives in Brazil after fleeing the French army's invasion of Portugal 2 months earlier. Bad to be a noble with no country. 1824, the Ashantis defeat British forces in the Gold Coast. 1849, Second Anglo-Sikh War. The siege of Multan ends after 9 months with the last Sikh defenders of Multan, Punjab, surrender. 1863, the January uprisings break out in Poland, Lithuania, and Belarus. The aim of the national movement is to regain Polish-Lithuanian Ruthenian Commonwealth from occupation by Russia. 1879, the Battle of Isandlwana during the Anglo-Zulu War results in a British defeat, and I mean it was a major defeat. Most of the army was destroyed, if I'm not mistaken. This was the first major encounter in the Anglo-Zulu War between the British Empire and the Zulu Kingdom. 11 days after the British commenced their invasion of Zululand in South Africa, a Zulu force of about 20,000 warriors attacked a portion of the British main column, which consisted of about 1,800 British colonial native troops and about 400 civilians. The Zulus were equipped mainly with the traditional assegai, iron spears and cowhide shields, but they had a number of muskets and old rifles as well. The British and colonial troops are armed with the modern Martini Henry breech-loading rifle and 2 7-pounder mountain guns, and they had a Hale rocket battery. But despite a vast disadvantage in weapons technology, the Zulus ultimately overwhelmed the British, killed about 1,300, including all those out to the forward firing line. The Zulu army suffered somewhere between 1,000 and 3,000 killed. And this decisive victory for the Zulus caused the defeat of the first British invasion. And the British army suffered its worst defeat against an indigenous foe with a vastly inferior military technology. Well, part of the problem was the ammunition supplies were in cases that needed a tool to open. And there weren't that many tools there, and they had sergeants who required the troops to sign for the ammunition before they'd be released to them. So that didn't go well. Also in 1879, the Battle of Rorke's Drift. This was about 15 kilometers away from Isandlwana. The British won this one. Also known as the Defensive Works Drift. It was a British defense of the mission statement of works, the mission station of Works Drift. It was under command of two lieutenants, John Chard and Gonville Bromhead. They were attacked by a contingent of Zulu warriors who broke off from the main force during the final hour of the British defeat. They meant to make a clean sweep of everybody, all the British on the battlefield. There were just over 150 British and colonial troops that defended the station. There were 3,000 to 4,000 Zulu warriors. Now, it was a massive but piecemeal attack by the Zulus, which came very close to defeating the smaller garrison, but eventually they were repelled. 11 Victoria Crosses were awarded to the defenders, as well as a number of other decorations and honors. Well, the British learned that they couldn't do things the old-fashioned way. 1890, the United Mine Workers of America is founded in Columbus, Ohio. 1901, Edward VII proclaimed king after the death of his mother, Queen Victoria. 1905, Bloody Sunday in St. Petersburg. That began the 1905 Revolution. 1906, the SS Valencia ran aground on rocks on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. Over 130 died in that wreck. 1915, over 600 people were killed in Guadalajara, Mexico, when a train goes off the tracks and falls into a deep canyon. Where were the air brakes? 1917, American entry into World War I. President Wilson of the still neutral United States calls for peace without victory in Europe. Didn't quite work out that way. 1919, Act Zluki is signed, unifying the Ukrainian People's Republic and the Western Ukrainian National Republic. 1924, Ramsay MacDonald becomes the first Labor Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. 1927, Teddy Wakelum gives the first live radio commentary of a football game between Arsenal FC and Sheffield United at Highbury. We would call it soccer. 1941, World War II, British and Commonwealth troops captured Tobruk from Italian forces during Operation Compass. 1943, Australian and American forces defeat the Japanese Army and Navy units in the bitterly fought Battle of Bunagona. 1944, the Allies commenced Operation Shingle. That was an assault on Anzio and Nettuno in Italy. 1946, in Iran, Qazi Muhammad declares the Independent People's Republic of Mahabad at Chanhar Chirag Square in the Kurdish city of Mahabad. He becomes the new president, and Haji Baba Sheikh becomes the prime minister. 1946, creation of the Central Intelligence Group, forerunner of the Central Intelligence Agency. 1947, KTLA, the first commercial television station west of the Mississippi, begins operating in Hollywood. 1957, Israel withdraws from the Sinai Peninsula. 1957, a New York City mad bomber, George Metesky, is arrested in Waterbury, Connecticut, and charged with planting more than 30 bombs. 1963, the Lycee Treaty of Cooperation between France and Germany is signed by Charles de Gaulle and Konrad Adenauer. 1968, Apollo 5 lifts off, carrying the first lunar module into space. Also in 1968, Operation Igloo White, U.S. electronic surveillance system to stop communist infiltration into South Vietnam, begins installation. 1970, the Boeing 747, the world's first jumbo jet, enters commercial service for launch customer Pan American Airways with its maiden voyage from JFK International to London Heathrow. 1971, the Singapore Declaration, one of the most important one of the two most important documents to the uncodified Constitution of the Commonwealth of Nations is issued. 1973, the Supreme Court of the U.S. delivers its decision in Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, legalized elective abortion in all 50 states. 1973, the crew of Apollo 17 addresses a joint session of Congress after the completion of the final Apollo moon landing mission. 1973, a chartered Boeing 707 explodes in flames upon landing at Kano Airport in Nigeria. 176 people die. Also in 73, in a bout for the World Heavyweight Boxing Champion in Kingston, Jamaica, challenger George Foreman knocks down champion Joe Frazier 6 times in the first 2 rounds before the fight is stopped by referee Arthur Mercanti. 1984, the Apple Macintosh, the first consumer computer to popularize the computer mouse and the graphical user interface, is introduced during a Super Bowl XVIII television commercial. 1987, Philippine security forces open fire on a crowd of 10,000 to 15,000 demonstrators at Malacanang Palace in Manila. They kill 13. 1992, rebels forces occupy Zaire's national radio station at Kinshasa and broadcast a demand for the government's immediate resignation. 1992, space shuttle program. Discovery launches on STS-42, carrying Dr. Roberta Bondar, becomes the first Canadian woman and the first neurologist in space. 1995, Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Beit Lid massacre. In central Israel, Netanyahu, 2 Gazans blow themselves up at a military transit point, kill 19 Israelis. 1998, space shuttle program, Endeavour launches on STS-89 to dock with the Russian space station Mir. 1999, Australian missionary Graham Staines and his 2 sons are burned alive by radical Hindus while sleeping in their car in eastern India. 2002, Kmart becomes the largest retailer in U.S. history to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. 2006, Evo Morales is inaugurated as President of Bolivia, becomes the country's first indigenous president. And in 2007, at least 88 people are killed when 2 car bombs explode in the Bab al-Shariki market in central Baghdad in Iraq. Well, we got a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Anastasius of Persia, Gaudentius of Novara, Laszlo Bethiani Stratman, Laura Vicuna, Vincent Pallotti, Vincent of Saragossa, Saragossa, Vincent Orontius and Victor, Blessed William Joseph Kamenad, Day of Unity of Ukraine in Ukraine, and in Poland, it's Grandfather's Day. Let's see what else we might have. 565, Eutychius is deposed as the Patriarch of Constantinople by John Scholasticus. 1371, King Robert II of Scotland is crowned king, becoming the first monarch of the House of Stuart. 1528, England and France declare war on the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. 1575, English Queen Elizabeth I grants Thomas Tallis and William Byrd music press monopoly. 1588, Pope Sixtus V decrees immense attorney. Reform Curia. 1673, postal service between New York and Boston is inaugurated. 1689, Lord Halifax becomes Speaker of English House of Lords. 1689, Prince William of Orange, the future King William III of Britain, summons Convention Parliament to discuss ruling jointly with his wife Mary. She was the daughter of the exile King James II. 1690, the Iroquois tribe in the U.S. renews allegiance to British against the French. 1760, the battle at Wandiwash in India. British troops beat the French. 1771, Spain gives the Falkland Islands to Britain. 1775, Marshal Oscar von Lubomirski expels Jews from Warsaw, Poland. 1798, there's a coup d'etat in the Batavian Republic. 1813, American forces capture French town in Michigan Territory. 1814, the first Knights Templar Grand Encampment in the U.S. is held in New York City. 1817, the British freighter Diana sinks off Malaya. 1831. And for those that follow the adventures of Charles Darwin, in 1831 he took his Bachelor's of Art exam at Christ College in Cambridge. He scored 10th out of 171. 1840, New Zealand Company settlers arrive aboard the Aurora at Te Whanganui Atara, which becomes Port Nicholson in Wellington. 1850, the Alta California becomes a daily paper, the first one in California. 1862, the Confederate government raises premiums for volunteers from $10 to $20. 1863, Union General Burnside's famous Mud March takes place on this date. 1873, the British SS North Fleet sinks at Dungeness in England. 300 die. 1877, Arthur Tooth, an Anglican clergyman, is taken into custody after being prosecuted for using ritualistic practices. 1889, Columbia Phonograph Company was formed in Washington, D.C. 1890, Jose Marti forms the La Liga, the Union of Cuban Exiles in New York City. 1901, after 63 years, Britain stops the sale of Queen Victoria postage stamps, begins selling the King Edward VII series. 1903, the Hay-Herran Treaty concerning the USA's right to the Panama Canal is signed by the Colombian Charge d'Affaires in Washington. Never ratified by Congress, but it was signed. 1908, Katie Mulcahy is arrested for lighting a cigarette, violating the one-day-old Sullivan Ordinance banning women from smoking in public, and got fined $5. When she appeared before the judge, she said, "I've got as much right to smoke as you have. Never heard of this new law? Don't want to hear about it? Nobody's going to dictate to me." Still cost her $5. Okay, let's see what else we got. 1943, the Allied Joint Chiefs of Staff determined the invasion date of Sicily is June 10th. They made the decision on this date in history. 1959, the U.S. Air Force concluded that less than 1% of UFOs are unknown objects. And on that note, we're going to go to our topic today, which is more ghosts of the American Civil War. We're going to start out in Virginia, in Leesburg, at Ball's Bluff National Cemetery. Now, when the Battle of Ball's Bluff occurred in October 21st, 1861, it created quite the scandal. It was quite a humiliating defeat for Major General George McClellan. It alarmed the federal government and created an infamous Joint Committee on the Conduct of the War. It just didn't seem right to the Union leadership that a seasoned army could be routed so quickly by a small upstart group of Confederate soldiers. Now, casualties for the North were high. There were almost 1,000 casualties from an army of only 1,700 men. The rebels suffered 150. 54 of the Union dead to be buried at this site, in the area known as the Ball's Bluff National Cemetery. It's the third smallest national cemetery in the country. And the spirits that haunt the grounds isn't one of the dead federal soldiers. The soul that's been seen in this particular cemetery is said to be a Confederate soldier. He was killed during the battle. And he didn't wait long to start doing his haunting. Said troops in the Tammany Regiment, one of the northern units, saw this ghost during the battle and even followed the ghost into the path of enemy bullets. They thought the ghost was one of their own, so they followed him. I mean, frankly, with the state of the Union leadership, they were looking for somebody to follow. These days, without enemy soldiers to trick, the spirit is known to roam among the headstones and appear before the eyes of astonished park visitors. Since some eyewitnesses reports of ghostly activity in the cemetery include the multiple misty figures and disembodied voices, you could probably conclude there's other entities with the poor Confederate there as well. In Mechanicsville, Virginia, we got the Cold Harbor National Cemetery. Well, you know a battle was bloody when a general such as Ulysses S. Grant says, "I've always regretted that the last assault at Cold Harbor was ever made. No advantage whatever was gained to compensate for the heavy loss we sustained." And indeed, the Battle of Cold Harbor lasted for 13 days, and it was constant conflict the entire time. There were over 17,000 casualties. And unfortunately for Grant, the Union Army took the bulk of the damage. At the conclusion of the affair, the Confederates under General Lee achieved their final victory of the war. Everything after this battle generally swung in favor of the North. In 1866, a national cemetery was created for the dead that were buried from the battle. And in 1936, the Richmond National Battlefield Park was created to commemorate the numerous Civil War sites and battles surrounding the city of Richmond. The crossroads of Cole Harbor is one of the many locations within this awesome park. As you can probably imagine, a horrific battle like that at Cold Harbor can leave behind a lot of misery. And it's the sad case that oftentimes these places become inhabited by the poor souls who died during these terrible times. So there are a few well-known haunted spots within the Cold Harbor portion of the park. The battle area surrounding Cold Harbor Visitor Center is home to the usual residual activity that occurs at most Civil War locations. You can hear the sounds of horses and gunfire and the shouts of men in battle. And once you've checked out this area, you might want to make your way to the old Garthright House. Located just behind a line of federal troops under the command of Major General Horatio Wright, the Garthright House was designated a field hospital. And the bloodied soldiers poured in from the battle. Union surgeons worked feverishly to try to save as many as they could. Meanwhile, the poor Garthright family huddled in the basement as the sounds of war raged outside and screams of wounded were heard overhead. Most believe it's actually a member of the Garthright family that now haunts the house. For decades, people reported seeing the spirit of a little girl in and around the old house. But she doesn't just hang out at one spot. She's actually been seen out in the Cold Harbor National Cemetery, located just across the street. And those who've seen her say she seems to be searching the gravesites. No one knows what she's looking for. There's no record of anyone in the Garthright family dying during the battle, but she may have stuck around after her death because she wanted to remain at her house. Whatever may be the reason, if you come to the Richmond National Battlefield Park, bring your lunch. There's a lot of great locations like the Chimborazo Medical Museum, Fort Harrison, and the Gaines Mill, where you can see a lot of unusual sights. Well, almost any structure standing today that dates back to the mid-1800s is going to be considered historical in some way. These sites not only endured over 150 years of weather, wear, and tear, but many were around when Americans were lobbing artillery and bullets at one another during the Civil War. Places like Capitol buildings and colleges and post offices and churches are often taken and for use as headquarters, military hospitals, or lodgings for the soldiers. And because of this, many of these spots are now well known for their ghost stories and paranormal activity. Let's go to Auburn, Alabama, a town I'm very familiar with. I spent a year at Auburn University. And it's the Auburn University Chapel that has gained the reputation as being haunted. Much like the state of Mississippi, Alabama was mostly the site of small skirmishes during the American Civil War. Now, the Mississippians did have one large battle at Vicksburg, though. Alabama, well, not really. But it's because of the relative peace of the area that many of the logistics operations were located there. Things like railroads and hospitals and cemeteries are quite common in Alabama throughout the Civil War. And the chapel located on Auburn University campus was one of these places. It was built in 1851 to be a Presbyterian church, and it did rather well until the Civil War began. They had a solid local congregation and one of the best Greek Revival constructs in the area. But as things tend to happen during war, the church was soon absconded to function as a hospital for all the wounded Confederate soldiers that were pouring into the area. Those who died were buried in local cemeteries, and those who survived would typically return to battle if they were physically able to do so. Once the war was over, the church functioned briefly as a school for the Alabama Agricultural and Mechanical College, but that burned down in 1887. Then received a makeover with a Gothic influence and eventually sold to Auburn University in 1921. During the years of 1927 and 1973, the church was actually used by the Auburn Players Theater. In fact, it's important to know since the actors were the first to render the ghost on the premises. The legend behind the ghost states the spirit is named Sidney Grimlett, a Civil War soldier who died on the operating table in the chapel in 1864. His body was transported and buried at nearby Pine Hill Cemetery, but apparently his soul remained behind. Why that might be? Well, to hang out with the actors, of course. Sidney's known to hide props for the shows, appear on occasion before startled students, and appear on stage during performances as a ball of light. And he's a bit of a theater critic as well. If he doesn't like the show, the rehearsals for a show, how the rehearsals for a show are going, he'll bang loudly in the attic. Said this activity was so common in the early 70s that the actors began leaving candy to placate him. Interestingly, when the theater program relocated to Telfair Pete Theater, the actors collectively asked Sidney to come along with them. Some say he did, others say he didn't. But if you decide to look for old Sidney, you may want to hit both spots on the Auburn University campus. And it is an interesting campus. I spent a lot of time wandering around that place. Then in Carrollton, Alabama, we got the Pickens County Courthouse. This is the third incarnation of the building located at this spot. The Pickens County Courthouse is well known throughout the state of Alabama for its ghost stories. Before we get to that, though, might be worth saying why the current courthouse is the third of its kind. The original courthouse was built prior to the Civil War and presided over the small town of Carrollton for many, many years. But it wouldn't be able to withstand an event known as Wilson's Raid. Brigadier General James Wilson was tasked to take his Union cavalry into Alabama to destroy anything that could advance the Southern cause. Now, at this point in time, it was late in the war. It was March of 1865, and Confederate forces were spread extremely thin, but Lieutenant General Nathan Bedford Forrest did make the attempt to stop them. Now, four major cities were targeted during the raid by General Wilson: Tuscaloosa, Selma, West Point, and Columbus. But dozens would be burned and ransacked and skirmished en route to these. The city of Carrollton was one of them. As the Union Army passed through, they set fire to anything of strategic importance, including the Pickens County Courthouse. Ultimately, Wilson's raid would be successful. Forrest had a much smaller force than the Federal cavalry. Despite constant harassment, he really couldn't stop them. Once the war was over, the courthouse was rebuilt and once again served the community. 10 years later, though, the second version of the courthouse would once again burn to the ground. This time, though, the circumstances seem a little odd. As the third courthouse was being built, the townsfolk searched for suspects for having burnt the second one. They soon came to the conclusion a local freedman named Henry Wells was responsible. A mob was formed, and Wells was hunted for the crimes of arson and burglary. Well, Wells knew the townsfolk were after him, so he hid in the one place he thought they'd never look: the new unfinished courthouse. Legend says he hid in the upper level and peered from the window there on the constant lookout for the mob. Unfortunately for him, though, he was found before long, drug out of the building and arrested. He never made it to trial. The mob took justice into their own hands and shot him. Now, most of this tale has been verified by local newspapers, but the legend of Wells and his capture has been expanded, and it's now known as the face in the window. According to this version of the story, lightning struck the courthouse as well as peering out, which forever locked his visage in the glass there. Others say the permanent image of Henry Wells in that glass is the product of his ghost. Once he was killed for burning the courthouse, his spirit decided to haunt the place. And after years of staring out the window, he's frankly left his mark there. In Decatur, Alabama, we got the old State Bank. You know, a battle is small when it's not even referred to as a battle. The official Civil War websites call this particular engagement a demonstration. But it's not a demonstration as we would think of it today. Occurring between October 26th and 29th, 1864, a Union force under the command of Brigadier General Robert S. Granger blocked off the crossing of the Tennessee River to the town of Decatur. Confederate General John Bell Hood, fresh from destroying a portion of the supply line feeding Major General Sherman's march south, decided he needed to cross the river to continue north. And that's when this skirmish, or demonstration, or whatever you want to call it, took place. Although the rebels vastly outnumbered the Federal troops 13-1, they were unable to dig the northern soldiers out of their trenches. General Hood realized that a full assault, though most likely successful in the end, will bring in a lot of casualties, so he decided to cross the Tennessee River further along the waterway in the city of Tuscumbia. What small amount of gunfire took place created a little over 600 casualties, most of them being Confederate. During this affair, the old State Bank, then known as the State Bank Building, is used as the Union Army's headquarters. Once the fighting began and was over, a portion of the place was utilized as a makeshift field hospital for the wounded. This circa 1833 building was just close enough to the battle that it earned a fair share of slugs and mini-balls in the exterior walls. The inside of the bank, especially the vaults, is also decorated by something even more gruesome: the blood of the men who were treated there. Today, the old State Bank is a living museum, and one of three Civil War era structures still standing in Decatur. With its Palladian-styled architecture and recently renovated interior, it makes a wonderful place to visit. It's also a popular place for ghost hunting enthusiasts to check out. There's a couple of well-known ghosts, some say three, on the premises. The most well-known spirit in the bank is that of the Black Lady, or the Lady in Black. Most people have seen her roaming the rooms and softly crying in the corners. Some say they're actually two different ghosts, and nobody can explain how the Lady in Black can't be the ghost that's also crying. It's also said to be an apparition that's been seen near the vaults where much of the medical procedures were performed. It looks like a Civil War soldier's. And the doors open and close by themselves. There are cold spots and items that move around. And, you know, it all adds up to a good haunting. So, if you're ever in Decatur, swing by the old State Bank when they're hosting ghost tours or some other paranormal-related event. You got one heck of a good trip ahead of you. Then in Marion, Alabama, the Marion Military Institute. Founded in 1842, the Marion Military Institute was originally known as the Howard English and Classical School. The name changed again during the war, right prior to the Civil War, to Howard College. And during the war, it would keep that name. As battles raged throughout the South, it became necessary to establish a medical center for all the wounded and dying, so the South Barracks of the college, along with the chapel, were transformed into Breckinridge Military Hospital from 1863 to 1865. 1887, Howard College was moved to the city of Birmingham, where it would later be renamed to Samford University, and the campus was turned into the Marion Military Institute, preparatory high school and college. The old South Barracks building would become Loveless Hall and the chapel. And the chapel pretty much remained the chapel. These days, the Marion Military Institute's a thriving campus, and the ghost stories of the institution are well known with the faculty and the students. They date back to the Civil War and is said to be a product of those who died while being treated at Breckinridge Military Hospital. During those years, Loveless Hall was the actual treatment center, and the chapel was a hospice of sorts for those who were doomed to die. Behind the chapel was a cemetery used to bury those who never left the surgeon's table. It's said to be the area from where the ghosts originate these days. Pretty much the entire area around the chapel has had some kind of paranormal activity. Ranges from sightings of apparitions to hearing disembodied voices and footsteps. Students have reportedly had encounters in the dorms. Glimpses of ghosts have taken place in various classrooms, and ghost lights are said to wander the grounds. On an interesting note, stories of students being temporarily possessed by the spirits are also told, and many believe the spirits are angry and quite malevolent. Only time will tell. Then in Montevideo, Alabama, the University of Montevideo, dating back to 1896, the university is the only public liberal arts college in Alabama. There are 28 spots on the campus listed in the National Register of Historic Places, and the institution consistently ranks in the top colleges in the South. Nothing in this description, including the date it was founded, would give you the idea of a Civil War ghost being present. At least not until you look at the individual buildings located on the campus. The two oldest structures in the university, the King House and the Reynolds Hall, date back to the mid-1800s. Edmund King, a rich businessman, well, unfortunately, no matter what I do to try to change my number or hide my number, the salespeople find it. As I was saying, the two oldest structures in the university, the King House and the Reynolds House, date back to the mid-1800s. Edmund King, a rich businessman, moved to Montevideo in the 1820s and built his house, which is named Mansion House. Town was steadily growing around him when the Civil War began. Initially, this was a safe haven of sorts to the Confederate Army. They could do some R&R and recuperate from the fighting and even seek medical aid if necessary. But as the war went on and casualties grew, the need for medical aid outweighed the need for relaxation, and a local building was turned into a field hospital. That building is now known as Reynolds Hall. Locals say in addition to the death and misery that usually happens in a military hospital, Reynolds Hall got an even more received even more than usual when federal troops came into the city. Legend states that soldiers under the command of Major General William T. Sherman stormed the hospital and killed a lot of the sick and wounded. Now, history doesn't really back this up. Troops did enter the city to destroy the nearby Bearfield Ironworks, but there was no discussion in the historical records about any murders in the hospital. Either way, those who perished in the hospital were taken and buried at the nearby King Cemetery. And when the war was over, the Alabama Girls Industrial School moved in. partially due to the support of war veteran Captain Henry Clay Reynolds. He had become the first president of the university, with Reynolds Hall being named after him. Of course, when it was discovered he was embezzling money, he got fired. The name of the school changed to the University of Montevideo in 1969, just after the first three African-American students enrolled for classes. It's also estimated that the first ghost stories began to circulate among the student population in the late 1960s. Now, there are a few haunted locations on campus, and you might consider taking one of their ghost walks if you really want to get firsthand accounts of what happened there. There seem to be five haunted areas. Now, Reynolds Hall is said to be populated by the man it's named for. It's said that Captain Reynolds was so crushed when he was fired from his position it affected him until his death. So he came back to the hall in the afterlife. People have reported seeing his apparition in the building, heard moans and groans during the night, and say that windows and doors seem to constantly open by themselves. There's also a legend that at one time a painting of Reynolds was removed from the wall and replaced with something else. Next day, the original painting was magically back in its location on the wall. Next stop is the old main hall building. It's known as the Women's Residence Hall. It seems to be haunted by the spirits of two young women. One is said to have hung herself due to bad grades, and the other named Condi Cunningham burned to death after a gown caught fire from a portable stove. Residents of the hall say that they hear female screams at night and footsteps in the hall, and they hear a female voice say, "Help me." Opinions seem to vary as to which ghost is doing these things. Other haunted places on the campus include the King House, said to be haunted by Edmund King, and Palmer Hall, where the ghost of Dr. W.H. Trimbauer is said to reside, and Hanson Hall, where the spirit of an ex-employee has been seen a few times. So who knows what you might find if you do the ghost walk. Let's go to Vinemont, Alabama. The Crooked Creek Civil War Museum. Now, the Crooked Creek Civil War Museum and Park is the culmination of 25 years of hard work for one man named Fred Wise. He worked laboriously to slowly turn a piece of marshland into a tourist site for those interested in the Battle of Hog Mountain and the Battle of Day's Gap. The museum is located in the historic Vinemont Stagecoach Inn, and if you really want to take the time to explore the park, you just might consider staying in the cabin that's located there. It's also a historic structure known as the Maze Home, dates back to 1830 or so, and relocated to the park in 1969 from the town of Somerville, Alabama. As for the two battles that occurred there, they're part of a series of skirmishes known as Straight's Raid. Led by Colonel Abel Straight, a Union force attempted to destroy and disrupt the Western and Atlantic Railroad that was supplying General Bragg's Confederate soldiers with supplies in Tennessee. When Southern Cavalry Commander Brigadier General Nathan Bedford Forrest learned of the movement, he pursued the Federal troops. And this set off a series of rear attacks by General Forrest as Colonel Straight and his men fled. These clashes started at Day's Gap and then occurred at Crooked Creek, Hog Mountain, Blountsville, Black Creek, Blount's Plantation, and ended at Cedar Bluff when General Forrest surrounded the Union soldiers and forced them to surrender. There's an interesting side note. Once the pursuit was over, one of General Forrest's subordinates, Lieutenant A. Willis Gould, challenged him to a duel. He was angry the general was planning to transfer him. Forrest won the duel, and Lieutenant Gould was transferred to the local cemetery. As for the ghost stories associated with the Crooked Creek Civil War Museum, there aren't any specific tales or entities to be named, but everyone agrees that the paranormal doings are associated with those who were killed during the war. But aside from one group who claims to have photographed the apparition of a soldier, there aren't many specifics. But there is a lot of documented activity. Both the cabin and the museum seem to be visited by spirits. People have heard disembodied voices, mostly whispers and moans, and the odd knocking and banging on the walls. Doors are said to open by themselves. Objects seem to be moved when nobody's around. And when ghost hunters have visited the location, it does seem to be an odd amount of EMF, electromagnetic fields. So you might want to stay in the old cabin overnight and see what you find. If you wake up and find a ghost in your bed, well, you were warned. Then in Fort Smith, Arkansas, we got the old Fort Smith Courthouse. Military post of Fort Smith was an important one during the American Civil War. This fort and the arsenal located in Little Rock were the backbone of the Confederate Army in the state of Arkansas. Soldiers stationed at Fort Smith participated in the Battle of Wilson's Creek and Pea Ridge and stood their ground at the post until a large Union force approached in August of 1863. Then they decided discretion was the better part of valor, and they abandoned the post rather than fight the overwhelming Federal force. After taking it in 63, the Union Army kept control of Fort Smith for the remainder of the war. Well, while all this was taking place, Isaac Charles Parker was serving as a city attorney in St. Joseph, Missouri. He was also enlisted in the local pro-Union Home Guard, known as the 61st Missouri Emergency Regiment. He earned the rank of corporal. He continued working in politics as well as the court system until well after the war. When Ulysses S. Grant, the commander of the Union Army, was elected president of the U.S., he appointed Parker to the United States District Court for the Western District of Arkansas. Well, after Judge Isaac Parker arrived in Fort Smith May 4, 1875, he wasted no time in cracking down on local criminals. In his first session in court, he tried 18 men, all accused of murder, and found 15 of them guilty. 8 were sentenced to mandatory death, and 6 were executed September 3, 1875. Parker presided over the court until 1889, when the court was shut down in favor of a new system that held jurisdiction over the Indian Territory. Parker later died that same year of Bright's disease, which he probably contracted during the war. During his 21-year tenure as judge, Isaac Parker tried over 13,000 cases, won 8,500 either pled guilty or found guilty, handed out 160 death sentences, with 79 making it to the execution. The others either died in prison or were acquitted. But his legacy as the infamous hanging Judge Parker would live on. Seems that several of those executed by Parker would live on as well. The old Fort Smith Courthouse is now part of the Fort Smith National Historic Site, and along with the barracks and jail is the Visitor Center. Employees of the site, as well as visitors who toured through the building, have had some rather interesting ghostly experiences. Apparition of a haggard man had been seen outside in the vicinity of the gallows where they presumably were hung. And some say the old courthouse is home to a residual haunt that allows people to catch a glimpse through time. At least 2 witnesses have been in the courtroom when they suddenly heard voices start speaking, and then they began to see the apparition of prisoners and even what looks like guards taking away a prisoner. Some say this ghostly prisoner is the same apparition that's been seen outside. He appears to be an old man dressed in ragged clothes and is known to hang out in the Fort Smith National Cemetery. Okay, then from Fort Smith we go to Little Rock, the old state house. It's the oldest surviving state capitol building west of the Mississippi. Built between 1833 and 1842 by architect Gideon Shyrock for Territory Governor John Pope, and it would remain the official state capitol until a new one was built in 1912. At that point in time, the building was converted to a medical school, renamed the Arkansas War Memorial, and then 1947 was transformed into the museum that it is today. Little Rock never had an official battle during the Civil War, but the nearby Battle of Bayou Fouche had a great impact on the city. Major General Fred Steele of the Union Army had his sights on capturing the city of Little Rock. So to that end, he deployed Brigadier General John Davidson and his cavalry to cross the Arkansas River to advance on the city. Men ran into Confederate cavalry, though, at Bayou Fouche, led by Colonel Archibald Dobbins, and they were the last hope of keeping the Federal soldiers out of Little Rock, and unfortunately, they failed. Southern force was routed, and the Union Army took the city of Little Rock that same day. Federal officers quickly took the old state house and not only made it their headquarters, but declared it the Union capital of the state. The actual Arkansas governor, Harris Flanagan, had already relocated himself to the city of Washington, which he declared to be the Confederate capital of the state. But it wouldn't be any of these folks associated with the Civil War that would stick around to haunt the place. Oh, no. That ghost, or maybe ghost, is one or maybe both of two politicians associated with two ugly incidents that occurred on the premises. The first candidate for the spirit that haunts the building is that of a man named John Wilson. He was Speaker of the House involved in an incident with a fellow representative named Joseph Anthony. When Wilson ruled Anthony out of order during a session, Anthony attacked him with a knife. Wilson drew a blade of his own and ended up the victor. Anthony died. The incident was ruled an excusable homicide. Several witnesses who've seen the ghost wondering about the State House say it is the ghost of John Wilson. But there is a second person who could be the ghost that, or maybe both of them, haunt the building. His name is Joseph Brooks, a politician who was involved in a bizarre incident that caused a temporary rift in the Arkansas government. Seems that Brooks is running for governor against Elisha Baxter and lost. Instead of being a graceful loser, he decided to usurp the office, set up a cannon in front of the State House, and declared himself governor. Meanwhile, Baxter set up an alternative government office down the street. President Grant was forced to step in and depose Brooks, and many say he was so crushed by it all that he came back to haunt the place. Whoever the ghost is, an appearance seems to be rather rare, so if you take the tour, you can check out the exhibits while you wait to see if the ghost comes back. Then in Washington, D.C., we got the Capitol building. So how can a location that's so integrally a part of the history of the U.S. be without a ghost? And frankly, it can't. Since the Capitol building, also known as Capitol Hill, was finished in 1800, there have been numerous stories of unexplained events taking place in these hallowed halls. Within this structure, you find the entire United States Congress, Queen Pelosi, and it gets thousands of visitors annually. So there are certainly plenty of people around to see the bizarre happenings that occur there. Since the Capitol was a site of so much unrest and worry during the American Civil War, you might think it'd be the spirits of this era that haunt the place, but you would be wrong. There's our next location we're going to talk about, said to be one of the spots Abraham Lincoln hangs out. The Capitol, though, occupied by a bevy of other infamous ghosts instead. The most famous ghost said to inhabit that location would be that of President John Quincy Adams. His spirit's been seen and heard in the area known as Statuary Hall. This is the former chamber of the House of Representatives. President Adams suffered a stroke while attending a debate there, but he was moved and died 2 days later. Those who've encountered his ghost say that you can hear his footsteps walking across the floor and sometimes even see what looks like a pale, glowing apparition. Right behind President Adams was his predecessor, the ghost of former President James Garfield. He was assassinated July 2nd, 1881, at the now-defunct Baltimore and Potomac Railroad Station as he was leaving to begin his summer vacation. His spirit said to walk the halls of the Capitol, and witnesses have seen him on more than a few occasions. His assassin, Charles Guiteau, is said to be seen haunting the building as well. Another well-known entity in the Capitol would be that of Pierre Charles L'Enfant, the original planner of the building. After working on the construction of the site for some time, he was fired by George Washington for destroying a local home that blocked the view from the new Capitol. Because he was summarily fired, he was never paid for the work and planning he had done. As a result, he became destitute. Now his forlorn spirit can be seen in the subterranean portions of the Capitol, usually moaning to himself about his mistreatment. So is that enough ghostly activity for one place? Well, other ghosts on the property include Henry Wilson, a former vice president, General John Alexander, and several former employees of the site. But the most interesting phantom at the Capitol is perhaps that of a demon cat that's seen and heard in various corners of the building. Said that the ghostly feline will often appear just before a tragedy takes place. And this bizarre entity is also said to appear at other locations throughout Washington, D.C., include the basement of the White House. And on that note, let's move to the White House, constructed between 1792 and 1800. It's been the official residence of the President of the United States since President John Adams. When Abraham Lincoln moved into the White House at the onset of the Civil War, he entered a residence in dire need of renovation, additions, and a new policy concerning access to the building. All these things were rectified in some way, and President Lincoln's tenure at the White House would certainly be among the more interesting ones in history. Lincoln's wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, was a staunch believer in spiritualism and hosted many seances while she was there. She was also, according to many reports, nuttier than four fruitcakes. And after the death of her son, Willie, Mary spent much time delving into this practice. Many believe her hobby also rubbed off on her husband. According to Abraham Lincoln's biographer, Ward Hill Lamon, the president dreamed of his own death and discussed it with him just 3 days before the assassination. Lincoln's bodyguard, William Crooks, also believed that the president knew he was going to be killed. He stated the president told him goodbye prior to going to the theater where he was killed. Crooks said the president never before said this to him, preferring to say goodnight instead. Crook also is the one that supposedly left his position to go have a drink at the nearby tavern during the performance. With all this information, it's easy to understand why Lincoln still haunts the White House to this day. His spirit's been seen in the bedroom named for him, in the yellow oval room, and even walking the halls of the second floor. Witnesses of the presidential ghost include Mary Eben, Eleanor Roosevelt's secretary, First Lady Grace Coolidge, Theodore Roosevelt, and many others have heard raps on the bedroom door and footsteps in the hall. Of course, Winston Churchill has the best story concerning the spirit of Lincoln. Churchill claimed after having a bath he was enjoying a scotch and cigar when he walked naked into the adjoining room, and there he saw the spectral sight of Lincoln leaning against the fireplace. He said the ghost seemed to be looking at him as he walked in. Churchill, ever the witty man, simply said, "Good evening, Mr. President. You seem to have me at a disadvantage." He said at that point, Lincoln smiled and disappeared. In addition to Lincoln, there seems to be a few other entities residing in the White House. The ghost of Abigail Adams, wife of John Adams, was seen carrying laundry toward the East Room. The spirit of David Burns, the original owner of the property, has been heard speaking in the yellow oval room. President William Henry Harrison is thought to haunt the attic, and the Rose Room is said to be inhabited by the President Andrew Jackson. It was during a seance with Mary Todd Lincoln that the ghost of Jackson was first encountered. If you get the opportunity, a tour of the White House is well worth your time. The guides know the ghost stories very well, can point out even more spooky spots. Just make sure you wander through the Rose Garden outside. The ghost of First Lady Dolly Madison said to have appeared there in the past when somebody attempted to dig up her garden. She's the one that is said to have been responsible for the planting of the Rose Garden. Well, we're going to be talking about a lot of other historic haunted locations in future shows, but for today, we come to the end because we've run out of time. As you might guess, the American Civil War, that Lincoln referred to as our recent unpleasantness, has given rise to quite a number of haunted stories. And quite often, after battles, there have been entities left behind, so to speak. We'll talk more about those in future shows. But for today, we've run out of time, so until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying, have a truly great evening.